This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Racism and the politics of the Tops shooting in Buffalo. We'll connect with Henry Lewis Taylor, founding director of the University of Buffalo Center for Urban Studies and School of Architecture and Planning, and author of The Harder We Run, The State of Black Buffalo in 1990 and the Present. And he prefers me to look at him as a mild-mannered professor. However, behind that characterization is a history of not only academic prowess, but enormous activity to deal with the very question, who'll pay reparations on the soul of people of African ancestry? And with that, Professor Henry Lewis Taylor, thank you for joining us.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here with you today, Mimi.
You know, one of the things that I'm just reminded of as we talk about who will pay reparation on the soul of people of African ancestry is, what do you know? What do you know? The Senate actually finally managed to pass an anti-lynching bill. I can't help, inform our conversation by that as the context that we operate in this country. You know, Congress had first considered an anti-lynching bill in 1900 when it was introduced by Representative George White, the only African-American then in Congress. And of course, it was unsuccessful. Since then, members of Congress have introduced more than 240 anti-lynching bills. Most recently in 2018, 2020, all have failed. Well, hey, the Congress, the Senate just passed an anti-lynching bill. And the question is not only how long, but the fact that we need it. And so I want to use that as the backdrop to ask you, there have been many mass shootings. But this mass killing of Black Americans in Buffalo, in a Buffalo supermarket, why must this serve as a particular wake-up call to this country?
Well, as a kind of a backdrop, I always like to use lynching to remind people of the long history of terrorism that was used against African Americans, where people could be killed, murdered, with those whites having no fear of being arrested or apprehended by the police. I've seen photographs of people being burned alive after they were hung, with folks standing around as if they were at a party. So it's the lynching is a reminder that this country and white America has a very, very long history of indespicable acts of violence against blacks and other people of color. Back to the Tops incident and these other shootings. I mean, I think that the attack on Tops is separate because of the obvious political implications that were involved in this. This guy spent months planning this attack. All of the available evidence suggests that he was in contact with others who provided him with insight and information in terms of the carrying out of this task. He was armed and prepared for mortal combat and went there to kill as many people as possible. I don't think it's possible to see him without understanding that this shooter was part of a white nationalist underground movement, a violent movement that have organic linkages back to the Republican Party, the right wing, and Trumpism inside of this country. And I think it's tied to a much broader initiative centering around nationalism and the creation of a new world order that was started by Donald Trump during his presidency, when he really ignited and the right and gave it deep levels of influence. So you can't separate this attack on the top store from the anti-critical race theory movement and the national efforts to suppress the black vote. And why is that so important? I mean, the black people, just in order to survive, have to fight against all kinds of policies that require a restructuring of the way in which the American society works. And that's just to survive. And as a consequence of this, the African-American population is the most consistently block of progressive votes for the Democratic Party. And in any election, including midterm elections, if large numbers of African-Americans participate in the electoral process, then they will swing those votes for the Democratic Party. So I think all of this has a political overtone, and I think it's connected to the intense battlegrounds between Democrats and Republicans that we see today. And I think it's a reflection of a mortal combat between two visions of the type of America that we want to build.
One of the things that you and I discussed in preparation, which I thought was particularly interesting, was the fact that Peyton Gendron had taken trips to New York City. He had taken trips to Harlem and so on. And I'm wondering if you can continue to develop some of what we were talking about why Buffalo? What happened in Buffalo and the kind of planning and deliberacy, and the fact that in essence what you're saying is that this is part of an ideological, if not also an actual conspiracy, to carry out nothing short of a genocidal policy against African Americans. But why Buffalo? What is it that we are supposed to know and understand about that as opposed to another black community? I thought your ideas were most interesting.
I mean, the conventional wisdom based on the initial interpretations of the manifesto was that Buffalo was selected because it represented the largest concentration of black people close to his home. That just isn't true. The distance between Buffalo Tops and the heart of Manhattan is about the same in terms of time travel. So there was a huge concentration of blacks in Harlem or in Bronx or even down in Brooklyn. So he had choices in terms of huge concentrations of African Americans there. The Rochester black population is around 82,000. Buffalo's is 89,000. So Rochester has about as many African Americans as Buffalo, and they also are heavily concentrated in certain portions of that city. So instead of heading east, he went west, and he drove past the Rochester community and jumped past Syracuse community that is smaller but also concentrated, and he came to Buffalo. Why? I think that Buffalo is a city with a national reputation of progressiveness. You can look across time, and Buffalo both in terms of the city and both in terms of its representatives at the state level, has always been a hotbed of progressivism. Saul Alinsky made his way to Buffalo and he teamed up with the black community here to build build organization, which was one of the groups that organized the entire black community. Buffalo was a site of Martin Sostry, the black revolutionary that claimed acquired international fame. The Black Workers Congress had a very powerful collective here in the city of Buffalo. And most recently, India Walton almost became the first socialist elected to a major city. So I think Buffalo, as a middle-sized Rust Belt city with a history of progressive politics, would make an ideal target to send to other communities across the nation. I mean, which would be very different than a New York City. A New York City is a mega city, and people love New York, but New York is New York, and anything can happen in New York. But Buffalo is different. Buffalo is a place that you can identify with and think about, well, if something like this could happen in Buffalo, it could happen anywhere, which is very different than if it was Chicago or as I said before, New York City or even L.A. And so I think that's why Buffalo was selected. It wasn't just because it had this huge concentration of African Americans, although that was an essential part of it, but it was all because of the symbolic value of hitting a target like Buffalo, and especially a Tops Market, because most of these kind of terrorist attacks on blacks have occurred in sacred religious settings. So why did he move from a sacred setting to a secular setting? And I think that move occurs because the desire was to send an intimidating terrorist message to blacks, that you're not safe in sacred, secular places like grocery stores or perhaps even polling centers.
So this is the context that you're putting this in is certainly not one of inadvertence in any way, quite the contrary, that it is almost an opening salvo or a escalation of other opening salvos declaring war on the black community. And well, that this was a concentrated and deliberate and specific target. This is not the rantings of a psychotic individual. He may be psychotic, but that does not take away from the motivational deliberacy and predetermination of this attack, which was decidedly genocidal in its view of black power.
I think it's broader than that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is a lot more than just an attack on black people to be attacking them. And this is what I mean by a larger vision of America. We have to understand that the right wing and the Republican Party have grown dramatically in strength. And they're in a position where they could seize control over the presidency and both houses. I mean, that's realistic over the next few years. So this is not just about black people. This is about how do you seize control over America. This is not so much about genocide as it is about intimidation and keeping you from participating within the electoral process so that we can maintain your positionality at the bottom. It's also about maintaining control over white people. this economy, this neoliberal economy, is creating havoc in the lives of all Americans, and as well as in the lives of these many of these working class whites. And everybody is asking, what's going on? What's wrong with my life? Why is there so much precarity and instability in my world? And the right is telling them, it's the black folks. It's the immigrants, the brown immigrants. They're taking your jobs. They're taking your opportunities. They're replacing you. You have to suppress them. Nationalism, both at a local and an international level, starts with othering people. And this is what this is about. And it's about an anti-globalism. Donald Trump and the right are opposed to globalism. They want to see a more regionalized form of domination and control, something similar to the age of colonialism. All of these things are tied together. And so the attack on blacks, this is an attack on America, not just one population group. And it's anchored by the reality that these blacks are the most progressive group inside of the country. If we can subdue them, if we can suppress their votes, we can seize control over America. I mean, I think that's the larger context. And anti-blackness has always been used in these kinds of ways.
So this has to be yet another wake-up call for America. So what you're saying, Professor, is that through the attack on the most progressive and democratic sector of the population historically, people of African ancestry, in their struggles for individual liberation, which ultimately had to include the building of a truly egalitarian and thus democratic society, that's what's really at stake here. But on a specific level, for the people in Buffalo and similar communities where these attacks have happened, what is it that this country is not doing that must be done? We must be the wake-up call to do what?
We're not yet free. I mean, one of the things that has happened with this instance in Buffalo and elsewhere, with the shooting immediately, the incident, once racism is identified, it defaults into individualized racism. And it becomes a story about individualized racism. And we see the themes emerging, replace love, hate with love. Hate has no place here. This is a place of love. It resurrects the ghost of Rodney King saying, can we just get along? Can we be friends? Can we be brothers and sisters? While ignoring the violence, the systemic violence generated by systemic structural racism. The experiences that blacks are having in these situations, dilapidated and run-down housing, over-policing and the like, are killing people. If you take a city of Buffalo where 70% of the residents are renters, 70% of the black population are renters, most of them are rent gouged, which means they're paying 36 to 40% or more of their income on housing. Most of them are living and paying a rent for substandard housing in neighborhoods where you can't even walk up and down the sidewalks because they're in such deplorable shape and condition. So the issue is that it's a battle against systemic structural racism. And the Liberal Democratic Party has done literally nothing about these issues. They've done nothing about these issues. And African Americans, in their fight to correct them, in their fight to eliminate health disparities, makes them a kind of chronically radical group. And it will remain this way until we really attack the roots of systemic racism inside of the United States. And the sad reality is that we're still more worried about the police and over-policing than we are about the dangers from the white nationalist right and their terrorism. So the terrorism is an issue and a growing danger. And it's the tragedy of America, if we want to use that language, is that African Americans find themselves at this moment of time trapped between the violent activities of the right, the dangers of the police. And here on the police, the suspicions are that at least one retired federal law enforcement agent was one of the advisors to this young shooter. So they're sandwiched between that force on the one hand and the forces of systemic structural racism on the other. So it's a very difficult period in African American history.
And you just evoked for me the issue that one of the latest that we know of, shootings of Leona Hale in Kansas City, Missouri, a pregnant woman who was shot by police, who had her hands raised moments before the shots were fired, was shot 5 times. And this is the reality. Kansas City police shot the woman 5 times with her hands up, 26-year-old, very pregnant, unarmed woman, who had also warned police officers as she exited a car that there actually was a weapon in the car, which was now vacant of anyone else. So, you know, you've put this in a terrifying context. And so the question is, for Buffalo, let's just for the moment with Buffalo, given the kind of deprivation that you've talked about, the social and racial and economic injustice that still abounds there. I know that people had talked about Tops as the sole market. Some people had described it as a food desert. You've actually said food apartheid. So in the remaining moments we have left, what do we tell or what must happen in Buffalo to at least begin some systemic address of the problems that were in its most virulent form emphasized by Peyton Gendron's massacre of the African-American community members there. But as you said, the police and economic deprivation are no less a threat to the integrity and very existence of the African-American population.
The reason Buffalo, New York was attacked is because we're a highly organized and progressive community. When we got an agenda that we're going to be pushing forward on, and it was our level of organization and development that made us prepared for the pandemic. So as soon as COVID hit, our people went into action, and we saved thousands of hundreds of lives as a consequence of that. So our approach is simply going to continue to push ahead, but we will center these activities around the abolition of health inequities between blacks and whites. We will forge a concentration and build a movement around improving substandard housing and ending rent gouging. We want to attack the commodification of vacant lands by the city of Buffalo. And one of the emerging goals will be to fight to create a community land trust where publicly loaned land can be transferred to the third sector, and that would be the evolving and developing social sector, which would give African Americans control over the land in the communities where they live. We're coming up with innovative ideas to improve healthcare services and attempt to divert some of these coming funds into the improvement of the infrastructure on the east side, the creation of a green infrastructure, the creation of sidewalks, and the improvement of roadways. So we have an agenda, and now it's a question of attempting to build unity among the different organizations and groups so that we can create the right kinds of priorities. So we're ready to fight.
Well, thank you for that agenda. Thank you for the work you do. We'll definitely have you back and continue these very important discussions. We've been speaking with Professor Henry Louis Taylor, founding director of the University of Buffalo Center for Urban Studies and School of Architecture and Planning. Take a look at, Google some of his work and the article, The Harder We Run, The State of Black Buffalo in 1990 and the Present. Professor, it is always enlightening and important to have you to give us some direction during these very perilous times.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.